All right, so I'd like to welcome everyone to this public affairs, POL committee meeting, not public affairs. And this meeting is being conducted in person on October 19th, 2023 in the Engineering Services Section boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there's a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, the meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You'll be notified when it's your turn to speak. To participate in public comment by phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of your phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. To the public attending in person tonight, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return the cards to admin to help expedite public comments. The procedures for tonight's meeting are, I will introduce each agenda item, staff will present, I will ask for public comment, I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. The committee will then come to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration, and we will consider putting items on the consent calendar when possible. All PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCV Water website. We have all committee members present tonight except for Director Bronstein. We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Armitage, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance tonight?
My pleasure. Please stand, place your right hand over your heart. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, do we have any public comments on non-agenda items?
No.
Okay, any public comment on that?
There's none.
All right. The first item is item 3, legislative consultant reports. The first one being a presentation by Jack Bowman of Van Squaic Associates.
Thank you. It is good to see everybody tonight. It's been a rough couple of weeks in Washington, D.C., as I'm sure you've seen in the news, since enactment of the continuing resolution to fund the government through November the 17th. Again, it's been a difficult couple of weeks. We've had a 2 to 3 week standoff in the House of Representatives after the ouster of Speaker McCarthy. This is the first time this has happened in history that a speaker's been ousted. So right now the House is operating with an interim speaker, or what they call a speaker pro tempore. It's Patrick McHenry of North Central North Carolina. Unfortunately, nothing can really take place in the House due to the nature of parliamentary procedure. Anytime there is a vacant speaker, it is what's called a privileged resolution, and it will supersede any other legislative business that takes place on the floor. And so anyone at any time could ask for a vote on the speaker. So the other thing that's impacted is the line of presidential succession has now been interrupted. This is not a constitutional crisis, but until this situation gets resolved on the majority side of the aisle, the Congress, you know, and even the Senate a little bit's also paralyzed. So you see it here, a lot of commotion, but very little motion. So we've had several weeks of Republicans choosing different members to be their speaker nominee behind closed doors, only for those choices to either fail behind closed doors or fail multiple times this week during House floor votes. There was a long 3-hour emotional meeting today behind closed doors amongst the Republicans, but no resolution has been reached. And I sort of cautioned folks when they ousted Speaker McCarthy that we were several weeks away from finding a new speaker. But there's important legislation that's kind of been built up. We've got to do something related to reauthorizing the Federal Aviation Administration programs. We have to reauthorize the Farm Bill programs, no farms, no food. We have to authorize the National Defense Authorization Act to protect the homeland. Something has to be addressed related to funds for Ukraine and Israel, funds for border security, and just the FY 2024 appropriations bills hang in the balance. Again, the continuing resolution expires on the 17th of November. The reason I bring this up is because Santa Clarita Valley water is not held harmless by this action in the House of Representatives. If you guys recall, we have $2.1 million, thanks to Congressman Garcia, that was included in the FY 2024 EPA funding bill for the S-Wells project. So until the House can elect a speaker, and then maybe they can bring up the appropriations bills, our S-Wells investment, federal investment, kind of hangs in the balance. Kind of moving on from that, obviously, Senator Feinstein's passing was a tragedy. You know, she's really part of the fabric of California's and really the nation's water policy. So she will be dearly missed. But there were some dominoes that tumbled this week. Senator LaFonza Butler, who was named by Governor Newsom, she was given her committee slots. She's now on the Banking Committee, the Judiciary Committee, and the Homeland Security Committee. Also this week, Alex Padilla was named to the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. That's good for us because that committee has jurisdiction over the Bureau of Reclamation. The one thing I would caution folks about is that we no longer have a California senator on the Appropriations Committee. That's the committee that funds all the discretionary programs of the federal government, especially the ones that we care about, like those programs at the EPA, the Bureau of Reclamation, the United States Department of Agriculture, and the Corps of Engineers. So we're going to time will tell how this absence on the Appropriations Committee is going to affect California. And then lastly, not included in our report, but we have spoken about it in the past. This came in earlier this week. The Environmental Protection Agency has agreed to withdraw its March 2023 proposed cybersecurity rule that mandated that folks like SCV Water increase your cybersecurity operations. It would have required you to incorporate cybersecurity practices into your sanitary surveys or your routine audits. The agency withdrew the rule, after some state attorneys general filed litigation. Industry also expressed concern. So that rule will not go into effect. And with that, thank you. Obviously, we're in a bit of a state of paralysis in D.C., but I'm happy to answer any questions you have for me tonight.
Thank you. And I should announce Director Bronstein is now here. Any director questions or comments on this? Dr. Armitage?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your report. A couple questions related to what you just explained. One is in terms of the $2.1 million that's being held back because of the inability to pass anything right now. Is there a danger that we lose that money, or it's just delay? It's just the only issue.
So I wouldn't use the word danger, but it is we are in very uncertain times. And so if we cannot get a fiscal year 2024 appropriations bill or package complete, they will have to probably work under what's called a year-long continuing resolution that just funds the government at the current level. The problem with that, Director Armitage, for us is that continuing resolutions never include project-specific provisions like the S-Wells project. So yeah, uncertainty right now, but as we move further, yeah, we could definitely find ourselves in a more dangerous territory if the Congress cannot do the appropriations packages. We are probably months away from knowing that. This may bleed into calendar year 2024 before we know. We may actually be working on your FY 2025 requests before we know the disposition of the FY 2024 requests. So this is Washington, D.C. It's a 54 square mile logic free environment. So this is the world that we have to operate in. And for us, this is just the new normal.
Okay. And then the second question related to one of the things you mentioned. So you're saying California no longer has a senator on appropriations. So did Senator Butler not just automatically get Senator Feinstein's committee assignments?
No, it that seat went to Kirsten Sinema from Arizona. They usually use a seniority system.
Wow. Okay. Okay. And then from your written report, I had a couple comments or questions. First of all, I just want to say I so appreciate the style of writing of your written report. I feel like it's written in plain language so that people who aren't familiar with kind of with the technicality or, like, you know, if you're not an insider on the Hill, you can still understand kind of what you're conveying. So I just very much appreciate that. And I just wanted to mention that. On the second page of the report, you mentioned that you gave information about the WIIN title, whatever, DSTAL notice of funding opportunities. And then you specify that BSA and SCV Water have begun discussing the project eligibility and timing, and that you'll keep us appraised. I just want to say thank you for including that, because whenever I read things like that, my question that automatically pops up in my mind is, look, are we eligible? Are we going for those funds? So thank you for just automatically providing that. And then you mentioned Senator Padilla and his noting that the low-income household water assistance program authorization expires at the end of the month, and discuss the benefits of continuing to fund that. And I know that there's also been action on the House side to also refund that, I think, infinitely. So I just want to say that that's very much of interest to me, and thank you for mentioning that. And if you could continue to keep us updated on that in the future, that'd be great too.
I would just really quickly add, we've got a piece of draft legislation from his office that we're looking at. I'm not seeing any showstoppers in terms of, you know, things that should be of concern to anyone. It would reauthorize a permanent program at the Health and Human Services, and then ultimately I think it would transfer to EPA. So at any rate, it seems like the wheels may be in motion a little bit on that. There is a corresponding House bill. Again, until the House can kind of figure out the speakership, everything's held in abeyance. You know, the Senate may be able to produce some legislation, but they're also trying to move some appropriation bills, not impactful to SCV Water, but others. And they're having a hard time getting those to their respective floor. So it's very difficult in DC right now.
Yeah, got it. Okay, that's all I
have.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff. You have a good evening. So it's like you're in good spirits despite it all. So thank you for keeping us updated.
It's good to see you guys.
Bye. Good night. All right. So next up, rather short, let's see who we have. Dennis Albiani and Emily Aiken from Cal Advocates. Oh, I should ask if there's public comment on that, right?
Yeah. Hi. Good evening. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
One sec. Did we have any public comment on it?
No.
Okay. Go on. Sorry. Just checking for public comment on the last one, but we're good.
Are we?
No problem. October 14th, so last Saturday, marked the day that the governor had to finally act on all bills. And so they've all been acted upon, either vetoed, signed, or law without a signature, but obviously he acted on all of them. And so he had about a 15% veto rate, so an 85% sign rate. There was, you know, mixed bag. He's definitely was pushing some of his discussions on trying to articulate a little bit more fiscal prudence due to the fact that we still are wrestling with at least a $31 billion deficit, structural deficit. But they are, excuse me, my phone's going. But they, but that was kind of a theme that he put through on a few of the vetoes. But everything else was pretty much, you know, piecemeal and specific to the policy. So we are now in interim. And so there's a lot of legislators in their districts. They're also doing a lot of educational trips, and then, you know, visiting with constituents. You may see them at a parade or two and doing those things. So that's kind of, and it's an off year Although what's interesting enough is we have a March primary. So by the time maybe even we meet again, you're going to see the papers are going to start being pulled. Official documents will be being filed, and we'll be running because they have to get them all filed and done before the end of the year. And so things are going to come very quickly next year. With that said, there's two major bills, I think, that Santa Clarita was engaged with that had resolutions. The first one is AB 1594 with Garcia. And that bill was the one where it was the legislature articulating to CARB that they wanted utility vehicles to be treated the same way as essentially first responders. And the Advanced Clean Fleets rule, everybody has to convert to battery or maybe someday hydrogen, but zero emissions. And so people were concerned among, for instance, first responders, that you need to charge those. They need to be available all the time, and a combustion engine allows for that. So utilities said, hey, look, you know, whether it's electrical or in our case, water, some of those services, we also will need to do that. And if there's a prolonged power outage for many reasons, you use a truck, you may not even be able to recharge. So those are some of the concerns. And that bill made it all the way through. We supported it, testified in committees. But at the very end, there was some amendments taken that essentially give CARB the last word on. So it, you know, it directs them to make sure that utilities can meet their obligations. And so it, you know, CARB, it's kind of a negotiation then that will occur between the entities and CARB. So that was a rule that we engaged on, and it passed. Well, like I said, slightly amended, but that moved. Now I'm going to kick it to Annalee to talk about the other bills she testified on, where we were, you know, taking a forward position. So go ahead.
Thanks, Dennis, and good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to speak to you tonight. So the next major bill that affected SCV water and that we were supporting, at least, was AB 1631 by Assemblywoman Schiavo. That's the CMEX bill that would have required a new opportunity for comment and notice of application from the Water Board for mining operations. So that bill was ultimately vetoed by the governor. In his veto message, he noted that the State Water Board has already formally stated its intent to renotice the application, and therefore he felt the bill was unnecessary. So I know we had supported that bill this year, so wanted to give the update on that, and it was our local assemblywoman as well. I also wanted to touch base on the four bonds that we've been speaking about. Those did all become two-year bills. So since this was just the first year of a two-year session, they'll be brought up again next year. And if passed, would be on the ballot in November. Dennis and I are going to be making sure that we are up to date on all of SCV Water's capital outlay and infrastructure needs as we're meeting with the lead staff for those bills in the next month or so during this fall interim, to really make sure that as funding opportunities might present themselves, SCV Water is available to have opportunities. There won't be specific earmarks, but as we saw opportunities for Arundo removal this year, there is funding already in two of the more comprehensive bills for invasive species cleanup. So we want to advocate for that to remain in there and then see what else, just what other opportunities that we want to make sure that they're available for us if those bills were to pass and if the bonds were to pass in November. So that concludes my update on the bonds. As I said, we're going to be meeting throughout the fall on those, and we will reach out to Steve with your team to discuss further.
So with that, we have a couple other. So for instance, tomorrow is the Aqua State Legislative Committee. That one's in person. And so I'll be serving on that committee and representing Santa Clarita and Region 8. There. And so that's an example of, you know, some of the actions. And there's two bills that are up for new consideration to be sponsored. They'll be, you know, discussed and taken through. And then there's ongoing some aqua meetings, some water rights meetings, because those bills, two of the three of those bills became two-year bills. 389 was signed by the governor Allen, and that got negotiated to a good space. And so those are some of the interim activities that we'll be doing. And with that, are there any questions?
This time I'm going to ask for public comment first because I forgot last time. So do we have any online? No? Okay, seeing no public comment, we'll go to director questions and comments. Director Armitage?
Thank you. Well, first of all, I noticed an additional last name for Anna Lee. Was there a happy occasion that we should know about?
Yes, I got married this summer, so transitioning to a new last name. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Very cool. Well, we wish two of you all the best.
Thank you.
And then secondly, I wanted to say that I hope that your entire team took October 15th off, because you guys were hustling and keeping up with everything all the way through October 14th. Yeah. So I hope you've had some downtime.
It was a Sunday. We did.
Okay. Well, there you go. Okay. And then I also wanted to say a similar comment that I made to Mr. Bowman is I really appreciate. I was reading these as I was walking my dog the other day. That's part of what I do, is I read my packets as I walk my dog. And I just thought to myself, these are really well written, and I really appreciate that, because again, it makes it easier for us to understand and follow. But also, if in case anybody from the public wants to peek in on what we're doing, I feel like it's easy for the public to read this and understand kind of what we're talking about and following as well. So thank you for the well-written reports as well. One question that actually kind of follows from the conversation with Mr. Bowman is, I'm wondering if any of our state funding related to water or any projects, any money coming to SCV Water in particular, is also kind of in limbo because of the federal gridlock.
Okay, so, all right, let me take a step back. So as we all know, the Inflation Reduction Act was a significant investment in infrastructure projects. And what was interesting about that is that they put the money into, each agency. So transportation went to transportation, water went to reclamation, those kinds of things. And there was not a clear, specific way that those funds would be allocated, across government. So you really had to, and let me tell you, honestly, we were working very closely. It wasn't just us, a little bit in the dark. The state agencies were. And so state agencies had to figure out, and DWR is talking to Reclamation and saying, hey, how are you going to allocate this money? And we didn't have direction and how they were going to do it. Then the money comes down, and then DWR can float it out. So I would say that some of that money was allocated into pots, and a lot of times very different than feds. And Annalie we used the example of Arundo control. We often in California make pots, and then, let's use DWR as an example. And then the agencies write grants and go get that water. That money. So some of that money, and I'm going to be very general, I understand some is not a very specific word, has been allocated and already put in pots. So that money is accessible. Some of that money from still has not been fully allocated. I would be speaking out of turn if I said whether the federal challenges with leadership back there is holding that up or not. I don't specifically know. But I do know that some of that money has been allocated, and there's some that's still being determined by the agencies. But I would say probably less than we think, because they've already gone through a budget cycle from when that was passed. But again, I'm not sure of the specifics on that, but that's how it affected California. I know some of that money is available.
Okay, thank you. Under the report, under the Aqua LS see update. There's mention of AB 755. It says would require a cost of service analysis, the inclusion of the difference in costs incurred by public water agencies due to increased service required by high water users. And I don't remember you talking about this before, so I'm wondering if you could, if you're just could tell us a little bit more about that.
So Emily and I actually talked about this. Well, I guess it was yesterday. It's a little bit of a funky bill, but what they want to do, and Annalise probably better at answering this, so I'll kick it to her in a moment, but is identify the largest water users and say that, and I think the theory is that they're more expensive to serve. I'm not sure that's going to pan out because obviously if you're putting a lot of water through one pipe, through one connection, and just a little bit of water through a connection, cost per gallon, liter, whatever you measure it, might actually be less. But I'm just telling you. And I'm going to punt it to Annalise because we actually talked about this and she was following very closely. So go ahead.
Yeah. And thanks. Great question about this. This was a bill that obviously made it through, got signed, and there was some, you know, there was opposition to it that, you know, some people were concerned that this would lead to some sort of public shaming of the highest water users that, you know, might be a school district or, you know, an entity that serves the public that shouldn't really be, you know, called out publicly for being a highest water user. And there's a little bit of ambiguity there. So there are still some remaining questions, but basically it does define the cost of water service for the highest users as the difference in cost between those users and basically just what increases are needed for those and to accommodate those. And so they have to, I'm reading it right now. Sorry, I'm just catching back up on this bill. But it says that they may be reported by customer class, rate classification, or cumulatively. And there's a list of different services and costs that they could include in this analysis. So it is another requirement on what has to be reported, as I said, for those highest users from the entity.
Okay. Did this become a two-year bill? Or did it, you said it passed, and I don't know. Why are we taking a position on it then if it... I guess I'm confused on its status.
Yes, this one, I'm looking back in the report. I don't think if it says on the report that SCV Water had a position on it, then that is an error. And I...
No, Aqua, it sounds like Aqua...
Yeah.
...is, it had a... it was initially opposed and then it was switched to neutral.
Oh, that was from Aqua's position. Sorry. So Aqua was initially opposed and then they removed their opposition.
But they want to put it back.
Yes. And so they had a special meeting just to discuss this. Basically there was conversation. There's a little bit of miscommunication between the author's office and advocates, and there was a belief that there would be a change in the language from shall to may. And so based on the assumption that would happen, Aqua, the conversation was that they would remove their opposition, but that amendment never actually took place. And so there was another meeting that happened for the purpose of discussing whether that they should change their position back to oppose because the amendment was never taken that the original position changed was based off of. And I know that sounds very circular, so apologies if that reasoning doesn't make sense, but it ended up that Aqua itself remained in a neutral position on the bill.
But it's a 2-year, right? It hasn't passed.
One did end up at the time of this report. I don't believe that it had been signed yet. But it did end up being signed. And because Santa Clarita didn't take a position on it, that's why it's not in one of those. It's not as highlighted in the report. So it's not under our key bills, but it was a key bill for Aqua that they were discussing. Okay. So it's not a 2-year bill.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Director Armitage, we did that because we sit on that committee. Well, I sit on that committee for Santa Clarita. And that was, Annalie did a very good job actually explaining the confusion. And if you're confused, she did a great job with it. There was an agreement to go to neutral. When they took these amendments, they didn't take all of the amendments. So there were people that were advocating to repeal that position of neutrality and go back to opposite. That got almost enough votes, not quite. And so then they tried to do one, well, okay, let's do an affirmative. That didn't pass either. And so there was kind of at the end of the meeting was, well, I guess we have a neutral position. And since we didn't change that, I guess we're going neutral. Yeah. And so that was how it kind of went down. And the reason it's in this deal is that was, we had to have a special meeting right before the end of the legislative session, like days before the end, where everybody got on and it led to that. So it was controversial. And to be frank, some of the water districts in Region 8 and 10, basically Southern California, were concerned. You know, a bunch of the like Central Valley guys were like, whatever. And so that's a dynamic. And that's why it's in this report, as you see, it's Aqua SLC update. And as long as we're on that, as I serve on that committee and Annalie monitors it very well as well, we'll kind of, we could include the section just to let you know what's happening on your behalf in that area. That even though it may not be a Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency priority or position or whatever, we're asked to vote sometimes on those things.
Yeah, no, I get it. I guess I was surprised because it seems like a biggie that we would have talked about earlier on in the legislative year. So I feel like maybe, I don't know if everybody was caught off guard or I don't know, but anyhow, we've talked about that one enough. Thank you for giving me that information. Couple more comments. Under the Making Conservation a Way of Life section, it seems like there's also the AB 1668 and SB 606. And they had a opportunity for public comment on that. And I was just wondering if SCD Water or Aqua made comments on those bills.
On the bills or the
making? At the hearings.
October 4th hearings.
Yeah, the workshop.
Annalie?
Yes. Yeah, Aqua. It was a very, just for context on how many organizations made comments, the meeting started at about 9:30 in the morning and it lasted a very long time, but public comments were going until after 7 p.m. So it was very widely attended and Aqua did make public comments and Santa Clarita had someone there making public comments as well.
Thank you. And then lastly, there's a section on improvement for sustainable groundwater usage and storage. Talking about the grant money that's coming through. And I clicked on the link. So just so you know, I click on the link sometimes. I clicked on the links to see what the projects were that were funded and was very excited to see that SCD Water was awarded $5.3 million for expanding monitoring for the monitoring wells. So that was fantastic. And thank you for including that information so that we knew that. So, and that is it. Thank you.
Well, and let me point out, that's a compliment to your staff, lobbyists. We do this stuff. We write the report, but your staff and they put in the applications like that and chase that money. And that's a compliment to them.
Thanks to our grant team. Anything else?
No. Yeah, I just, so quickly, I just wanted to mention that when we're tracking funding opportunities in the future, maybe pay special attention to opportunities for Sites Reservoir. Probably not the only director that has a lot of interest in that. And maybe keep us updated on anything that would pertain to that potentially.
Will do. Thanks, Director.
Good idea. Okay. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for being our eyes and ears up there. We appreciate it. And thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We will have a page. Upside down. Sorry. Lost my place. I'm sorry. Next, we have education program highlights, item 4.
Good evening. I wanted to introduce Tammy Bastian. She's one of our educators in our outreach and education program. She's here to give an update. We try to add in more frequent updates of all the programs that we're doing with our public engagement and our outreach. And so tonight, I want to focus on education, some statistics from last year, a look ahead to this school year, and some changes that we're making in our program. So we're aware of that. And we'll ask for some feedback, suggestions, opinions on how things have been going, how we've been updating you on education and outreach, and then ideas that you may have for future engagement opportunities.
All right. Well, just a little bit about myself. I've been with the SCD education team for 15 years. Prior to that, I was a teacher at Placer Ridge Junior High School for 15 years. And then prior to that, I was an educator at an international boarding school in Kenya, East Africa, just for 1 year. So I've been involved in education for over 30 years, and I am thrilled to be a part of the SCD Water Education Team and to get to talk to you about it a little bit tonight. So we do have an overview, and it's a very short overview with a few photos of some of our students engaged in some of our lessons. So let's go ahead and get started, because I've already talked to you about the fact that I talk for a living, and so I'm going to try and keep it to my 10 minutes that I've been allotted. So our school education programs overview, they are available to students in the Santa Clarita water boundaries, both public and private. Our program has been around for over 25 years, and so because of the longevity of our program, they are highly valued by the teachers here in the Santa Clarita Valley, as well as we have established really strong relationships with not only the teachers, but also administrators and the school districts here throughout Santa Clarita. Our programs are aligned with the curriculums that are taught at the grade levels, and we really are looking forward to continuing our education programs with our K through 8 students and just increasing awareness about water and aspects of water, some of which include the water cycle, water supplies like the State Water Project, groundwater supplies, things like that, our water treatment, water quality, uses for water, and that even includes hidden uses for water, so because we're using things we don't know how much water it takes to produce those things. So we talk about that as well. The value of our water, that it is a limited resource and it is precious, and so therefore we must protect it and take care of it. And so water conservation is always part of our programs. Our programs can basically be split into three groups or three categories. So we have our younger elementary school students, kindergarten through second grade. Those presentations are presented at the school sites in the classrooms. We can usually fit 3 to 4 classes in a day at a school site. And that's always the same grade level. So we take out the lessons for that grade level, and then we would see it, say, 3 or 4 first grade or kindergarten or second grade. And those lessons are, the students are involved. We have interactive things that they are part of the lesson. Then our upper elementary, 3rd through 6th grade, they actually get to get on a bus and come up to the water agency at the Rio Vista Treatment Plant. And they are involved in lots of different activities. So each of our programs is, it's different for every single grade level. So a student could see our programs from kindergarten through 8th grade and never repeat a lesson because they are specifically designed for every grade level. So if you were to peek in at some of our 3rd through 6th grade field trips, you might see students who were looking through microscopes. You might see students who are conducting water quality chemistry experiments. You might see students putting together a model of our treatment plant. You might see them on a tour of the water treatment facility. You might see them on a tour of our water conservation garden, things like that. As far as the junior high school programs, those are, again, at the school sites in science classes, and our 7th grade focuses on waterborne pathogens and water treatment. and the students read scripts, and it can actually, it can get pretty funny at times with the junior hires. The eighth grade focuses on water treatment and the state water project, aquifers, and then it ends with a taste test between tap water versus bottled water, see if the kids can figure out which one is the tap water, and they really enjoy that. So the teachers and the junior hires get really involved in both of those very interactive programs. And we have not gone back to the junior high programs since the COVID shutdown. So this is our first year that we are back to offering the junior high programs. And as soon as the junior high teachers who participated in the programs in the past heard about it, they just could not beat a path fast enough to sign up. So we're really excited about that. So that brings me to our stats for this last year. Our 2022-2023 overview was our first year returning to in-class presentations post-COVID. We taught 8,316 students and 691 adults. That was a very successful return. The teachers and students were honestly thrilled to have us back in the classroom. They were so excited to get to come up to the agency and then just to see us in person in their classes. So that kind of made us want to look back and say, well, how does that compare to, you know, pre-COVID? So we looked back at 2018 and 2019 school year, and we saw 10,101 students in person, and that included junior high and our summer environmental science workshops. Then in 2019, we had classes from the end of August until the first week or so of March 2020 when the shutdown took place. We did not see any junior high classes that year because typically the teachers plan for a late spring programs for us to come in late in the spring. So we missed out on junior high. And we, of course, didn't have a summer program. The next year, 2020-2021, was our virtual presentation. Since the students were all doing distance learning, we were doing distance field trips, and we were able to see 5,714 students that way. Again, no junior high. 2021 to 2022, the students and teachers returned to the classrooms. However, the districts were saying that we couldn't go in as outside presenters, and there were no field trips. So again, we presented virtually distance and they projected us up on the screen in their classrooms and things like that. You can see that there was a dip in numbers, and we really actually kind of weren't surprised by that. So we saw 5,624 students, but there was an apparent weariness to the online aspect of learning. And so that was very clear. The teachers many times said to us, you know, we can't wait to get to come back up to the agency. We can't wait to have you into our classrooms again. And so that's why you see the bump in our numbers when we were able to return to in-person this last year. And that's even without junior high or any environmental science for this last year. So, wow. So that brings me to my next point. We have a full schedule for this year. We have people booked all the way through the school year, and we're really excited about that, including the junior highs. Now I bring you what some may consider the bad news. It was not unexpected to us. So after a 10-year run offering environmental science workshops to our high school students, that program has come to an end. So there are several things that affected that. We had some changes in school policies that drastically affected our attendance, and there was a big decline. Mm-hmm. So for one thing, the Hart District no longer requires summer assignments. And with that, there were some teachers who weren't motivated to offer the program, and the students were obviously not motivated to want to attend if, you know, there wasn't a reason. Number two, we had some teachers who felt that that the program was not equitable because they had students who either wouldn't be able to attend. Mm-hmm. And when we had it online, we did offer it online, that they didn't have access to internet or computers. Mm-hmm. A third one was in the last, 5 years or so, the teachers who were actively involved in the program. We're having difficulty getting class rosters early enough to inform their students about the summer workshops, mm-hmm. and weren't able to even know who their students were going to be until after school started. Mm-hmm. So that was a problem. We had some participating teachers who had actually helped us develop the program, you know, years ago, who retired, mm-hmm. and then the teachers who came in after them were not as invested in the program because they hadn't been involved with it, and so they didn't tend to offer it. Mm-hmm. And then there were some district changes in the science curriculum, the science classes that were offered, and they weren't offering as many environmental science classes, and so the teachers that were participating had fewer students even, mm-hmm. As far as the classes go. So those were among the things that added to the decline in attendance. So after consulting with the participating teachers this summer and having zero signups from students, mm-hmm. zero, we all decided together that it was best that the program had run its course and that we were going to bring it to a close. And so they expressed their thanks to us for the 10 years. And we're very proud of the 10 years that we spent developing that program. So we were, as I said, not surprised by that. So what we did was that we began a scout program. And in July of 2023, this summer, we had a pilot program that we offered to two different options to the scouts. We had a program for the younger scouts, first through fifth grade, and then the older scouts, sixth grade through high school. The program is, and the curriculum are based on the scout soil and water merit badges and the water journey badges. So it's a very specific curriculum based on those requirements to get those badges. And we incorporated activities and lessons to help the participants meet some of those requirements. So taking our workshop wouldn't help them meet all of them, but it would get them started, get a good start. We had really positive feedback from the parents and the scout leaders that were part of our limited pilot program this last summer. And afterward, as an education team, we reflected on it and, you know, talked about what we felt worked, some things that we thought we could maybe change and improve on for the curriculum for this year. And so that's where I will tell you that this July 2024, we will be offering a full program to the scouts, both older and younger. And this is open to any of the Boy Scout, Girl Scout, Scout troops, packs, patrols, all of that. And we will be talking to scout leaders as well as the organization, which is what we did last year for our pilot program early in the spring, so that they will know the dates, the times, how to sign up, and all of those things. So in conclusion, on behalf of the education team, I want to thank you very much because the board has been continually very, very supportive of our programs and supportive of our educating the students here in the Santa Clarita Valley. You always make sure that we have what we need to be able to bring the best programs to the students. We want to thank you for that. So that's all I have for you.
All right. We have any public comment on this?
We do not.
Any public comment? Nope. Okay, we'll go to director.
Enjoyed it.
Okay. Good. Good. Did you have your hand in?
No.
Oh, okay.
I always have something to say. So I didn't even realize that we do education to the junior high kids too. And I've had three kids go through all of them, but one is almost finished with high school. So one of them went through COVID though. So that makes sense that way. I wouldn't know through her. She's the one who talks to me the most. So I would have known probably from her, but the other two, I had no idea that you guys went to the junior high as well.
Now secondary is, it's completely different than the elementary school. And so, you know, there is so much in a secondary classroom that has to be covered that it's really difficult sometimes for the teachers to, you know, let go of instruction time and to have someone else in their classroom. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we do have the program and the people that have used it absolutely love it. And they schedule time and time again. And, you know, others, you know, are reticent to give up that time.
Do you guys, I'm sure you give out materials and stuff to the kids, right? like so that maybe they take home, because it'd be great for the parents to see, and maybe my kids just never give me anything, and so that's part of the problem. So,
yeah, so they all get something that they take home.
Okay, okay, good. So the elementary level program is so awesome. I think that's so great. I think you educators are like the best. So thank you for all you do. I'm sad that we had to let go of the high school program. My son did do the APES program, and he did come. That was one summer that he came, and he did it was volunteer, and he got extra credit from his teacher to do that. So I do remember that. And I'm sad we have to let that go, but the fact that we have an intern program now, you know, get maybe some of our youth kind of involved that way who are super interested, that's positive. The scout program, I think, is fantastic and is just primed with, I mean, this is like the best area for a scout program because we're such a scout community. The only thing I'm wondering is it possible to just not make it exclusively scouts, like open it up to other kids who, like high schoolers who maybe want to come to a program like that and learn more about it?
Homeschooling.
At this point, we're not opening it up to that simply because it's still, in a sense, a pilot program.
Okay.
We had a very limited pilot program, and it is very clearly based on the Scout curriculum.
Yeah,
and in fact, we even had scouts at the older scouts saying, which one, and they had their hand up there, which one did we just meet? So we have something that we give them and the leaders so that they know which requirements we've met and which ones they can continue to work on. But at this point, we're just focusing on the scout program as it is.
Yeah.
And then at the end of this summer, we'll do the same thing that we did this last summer. We will evaluate, look at how things are going, you know, any changes and things like that we need to make. So sometimes with a new program, we're in that mode for a couple of years. It depends.
Yeah, I get that. You know, if ever in the future you feel like there's a way to like slip in some other kids who aren't necessarily scouts, but they want this experience and they're just older, like that would be great. So just throwing it out for thought. And then the only other thing I wanted to say was, the visitor, what is it called? Visitor Center up at Pyramid Lake. That's the DWR.
Vista Del Lago.
Vista Del Lago. Thank you. It's so fantastic. I wish there was a way that we can incorporate that. Or I know it's so far. That's the problem. I wish it was closer to us because they have amazing exhibits that you guys could like build all your curriculum around. So, yeah, too bad. Too bad it's so far. I was the scout leader for a long time too. So I took my scouts there as well as part of their badge requirements, whatever they were working on. So, yeah, but great job. You guys are amazing. I love our educators and whatever we can do to support you, let us know.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. I lament the loss of the APES program. I think I was the one who initially brought the teachers in, and I was in a lot of the original meetings, worked on pushing it forward, I think. So it's unfortunate.
Well, I know you were definitely part of our scholarship program that we had many years ago as well. Very supportive of that.
So anyway, I would encourage you to continue to look for opportunities in the high school and to try to figure out how to align their curriculum with things that we can support and maybe get back into high school classrooms or into that audience. So again, I it's unfortunate that it died. It started out pretty useful.
Yeah.
And unfortunate.
But just to piggyback off of what you said. So I've had some ideas because so the school district has pathways, right? So I've been ruminating a lot of ideas in my head around how we can work our way into a water type of pathway. So I've been thinking about that too. And that would be maybe not necessarily the same thing, but it would be a way to get people who are interested in water an avenue at the high school level. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a high school right across the street. That'd be a great place to to think about that. Actually, they got involved pretty early in the APES program. started with Valencia, and then I think Saugus sort of, as I recall.
Yes, Valencia and Saugus teachers were very involved in the beginning of the program, yes.
And the pathway stuff wouldn't necessarily involve you guys. It would be connecting actually with College of the Canyons program. So I don't want you to like oh my gosh, what is she putting on us? So it wouldn't involve your team, but at least it would bring a water aspect to that. So,
and if you'd like, just for a little background, we have in over the last 15 years since I've been with the agency, we've had four different high school programs that we have attempted. So we had a scholarship program for quite a few years. We had an in-class presentation for quite a few years. We had we've tried multiple things. We also went on campus during lunch or, you know, break, things like that to try and get involvement that way. And then, of course, the environmental science program. So those have all been, you know, programs that we tried working with the high school students. So, you know, pathways maybe, yeah.
Yeah, high school's a tougher crowd. Mm-hmm. They're not going to show up on their run
right.
and lunch.
And yeah. We did, just to wrap this one and come, you know, full circle, you did participate in the Career Opportunity Day.
Yeah, for the Park District.
Yeah.
When I came high school.
Yeah, so I think that's similar to the pathway. I mean, similar to pathways, but to get them thinking about what they could do, you know, for a living, too, so that we are doing still some things.
Yeah. I'm going to suggest, like, ask about a career.
First of all, thank you
very much. Because anyone that helps educate, you know, the next generation, that's where it is. You know, we change, we help the next generation understand things that we didn't understand when we were younger. And then we're starting at a much better place. So thank you very much. I was thinking about career and career day and how to do it. But I was wondering, because there's so many different aspects of it. I mean, there's engineering, there's programming, there's so many different things. I was wondering if we could do something like issue a challenge or a competition between high schools to solve a certain something in a certain format. And each year it could be, one year it could be, you know, environmental, one year it can be water supply, one year it can be, you know, different facets.
Yeah.
So then kids get the idea that there's different ways that they can be involved in all these things that they're already interested in,
mm-hmm.
and how they connect and tie in to water and all that.
That's really
stuff.
Interesting.
I'm kind of still processing all of this.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
And are all of our, like, are we fully booked?
For this coming year, we are almost.
Okay.
Yes. There are a few spots still open, and we have people that are filling those very quickly.
That's pretty exciting, because, you know, we're only in October.
Right.
That's pretty good to hear that we're that far booked.
Well, and another thing that often happens is that a teacher will come in, they'll have their field trip, and then they go right back and they sign up for next year.
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah. That's pretty smart. And it's because they provide the buses, right? It's like a free transportation.
The ones that come up to the agency,
yeah.
we do provide transportation.
That's
now.
Terrific. Mm-hmm. That's the biggie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really expensive for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always, I find mind boggling.
Go for it. I was going to say, I think I'm just going to build on what you were saying. And I hope I'm not repeating. But I think what the work that you do is so important, because, like you said, what you teach the kids are often teaching things to the adults that they didn't necessarily have. So it's really driving behavior change. A lot of times the kids are coming home and driving behavior change in the homes. So, you know, I feel like this is an investment, right? In helping us with the conservation message and bringing that out further. So, yeah. Yeah. So thank you again.
No, I'm still, as I said, I'm still processing and thinking of stuff and ideas and knocking them down in my head. You're welcome.
I was going to say, should we contact you or Kevin if you have follow-up thoughts?
Yeah, I would say as we close this, we have met with Jenny, who's our supervisor of the educating group, mm-hmm. about potential addition supplementations for next year. I understand we're all booked for this year. We've got mm-hmm. everything dedicated, our resources planned out. So as we look into next summer, we've talked about how we can utilize the Bridgeport Garden, which is tough to do on site because we really need a 4-day of programming there.
Yeah.
So it's hard to get a class.
Yeah.
Do a field trip there when it's not 2 hours or 3 hours to come.
Yeah.
So we're throwing ideas around and something like I think you're getting at Dr. Bronstein, a science fair competition.
Yeah.
Those are ideas that we can have. We continue those conversations. And then as we make changes, augmentations, whatever, to the program going into next fall, we're happy to report back on
that. And then something that Maria, Director Goodwin, threw out was the homeschooling community. Do we tap into that at all? Because
they are, along with private schools and the public schools, they are welcome to sign up. We have had homeschool groups come up. They just need to meet a minimum number of students. And generally with the homeschool groups that do come up, it's we'll have, you know, an age range, and they will pick one of our programs that would, you know, meet the older and younger students within that group.
I have homeschooled for 10 years. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
Neglect them, but I didn't ask them.
Okay.
Understood.
Well, good. Well, thank you for the update. And I really liked seeing the different years, how it varied through COVID. I would be interested in seeing what you come up with. If there's something that makes sense to add into the high school, because with a freshman this year, I feel like kids may not, let me back up. I feel like you learn what you want to do with your career from being exposed to it. And, you know, they have all these classes, but they don't know what they're going to do with the classes. They're very busy. Should they take AP Environmental Science? I think if they see people working in these fields and hear from them, like, you know, I think I love talking to Ali, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I worked here and there, and I planned the water for this city, and I lived in Tokyo. I mean, kids would be like, wow. I don't be like that guy. And now I can get kids on a science path. But if you just say, you should take science because it's really good for you, or you'll make a lot of money, they're like, whatever. You know, so I think telling the stories of the work that's done in water is going to get them either to go to the, what is it called at COC? Don't we have a, like, wastewater treatment? So, like, operator, they could go the operator angle. They could go into water resource planning. They could go into the chemistry section. So maybe, like Director Bronstein said, sprinkling in those areas, like sponsoring something or a module, or even having a speaker go into their classrooms. A lot of times I'll have career speakers just pop in. There's got to be a way to reach those kids and, you know, hopefully inspire some. So,
And it could be even classes that they already take, like robotics or coding or something like that, where it's just like you give them a challenge. Here's a system, like, or here's a whatever, here's a problem. Use the skills that you're doing in class to figure out,
you know. Tell them an application. I was just talking to somebody yesterday about flying drones for LIDAR. He started a business flying drones. We use LIDAR. So, hey, all you drone people, this is what the water agency uses drone. I mean, just a half hour segment about application for what they're studying in the real world. And then they connect it to why they're sitting in a class taking tests. So it's great, great opportunities out there. And thank you for the update.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. All right. Next, we have the communication manager report number 5. It was in the package. Good evening.
I'm trying to go quickly through these. I know I have a lot of updates from missing you on last month, so I wanted to make sure that I get through the bevy of information that I got. Starting with our social media and advertising quarterly report, we got our first quarter done from our change July 1st through September 30th. So I wanted to give some high level overview of where we are on social media, and specifically our advertising that we started with Spectrum and their digital network. So all four of our social media channels in the last quarter, Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, and LinkedIn, saw an increase in followers and engagement, mm-hmm. the largest increase being LinkedIn by 7%. Mm-hmm. And we attribute that to posting more about our job openings and highlighting mm-hmm. our staff achievements, awards, and different programs that they're involved in. One thing that we do want to focus on for social media going into the next quarter is having more behind-the-scenes photos. Videos have been doing really well, and we post a lot for water professionals and more of those fun, engaging videos. We want to do that more often or see good traction with those. So that's our social media quick report. For our advertising through Spectrum, I believe when we went through it last time, we were making the recommendations to change our advertising. We talked about Spectrum not from a television-only channel, but through their digital network advertising, pre-roll on online videos, and their different search capabilities that they plug into. So some highlights from that. We saw that we had the most engagement when people were viewing on their mobile device. Mm-hmm. And we found that when folks would interact with our ad and then go throughout the Spectrum network and be retargeted, that those who went to the Yahoo homepage saw our ad more often, engaged with our ad more often, clicked through. And so we're seeing that partnering with those news networks is where we're getting our most engagement through retargeting. Our cost per click for the last quarter was at $3.72 per click. And an industry standard is $5 per click. And when you invest it, you would expect every $5 you spend on advertising to get one person to go through your website. And the top keyword that people were searching to get to our ads that were coming through those search networks were water conservation, water rebates, and our sprinkler systems. Those came up most often. For streaming television and online video, again, mobile was the most commonly use device to interact with our posts. We found that almost 98%, 97.93% of people who saw a pre-roll ad or saw an ad in their content that was our Santa Clarita Water ad did not abandon that content. They watched to completion. They kept going.
Wow.
A lot of that is I'm halfway through my video. I'm going to watch this 15-second ad. I don't.
Well, they can't fast forward it or skip it.
No, it's the ads that come in that you have to watch.
Oh, okay.
So the industry standard, which is to say utility ads, are at a 90%, and we were nearly 98. And the benchmark that we were trying to hit was 95. So the last note from Spectrum was that they gave us a statistic that from my understanding, is something that they track. I haven't heard it before, but it's something to watch going forward. They call it digital lift and seeing what our digital presence is for those who see our ad, how much more likely are they to then go to our website versus people who find our website organically who did not see an ad. And they found that when they measured the two audiences, people who saw our ad were 4.5 times more likely to then go to our website versus people who got there organically. Seeing an advertisement first. So
it's amazing they can track that, but it's cable users.
It's cable users. It's not just Spectrum customers. So it's people that are, when they see an ad, let's say you're watching through your Roku, your streaming TV, and then you're in your home, you're connected to your network, you're watching that and you see SCD Water, our 15-second or 30-second commercial, and then you go on your phone and you type it, that still tracks because you're on your same Wi-Fi network within Spectrum. They have the capability to do that.
That's cool.
That tracking.
That's creepy.
Exactly. A big brother.
Yeah. I've been doing this for a really long time, guys.
So that's why when you look at your phone, you're like, oh my God, I was just talking about this. Most often it's because you watched it on
TV
and or you're not actually listening, but they are listening.
Yeah.
So that was specifically for Spectrum that we got our first quarter from that. So those are numbers that we are going to be tracking going forward, and we'll give an update every few months. Into the Fall Water Academy, because that's coming up soon. I know Mr. Cole presented or gave an update about that on Tuesday. We're going to be starting on Wednesday the 1st is our first session. And three of the four sessions are going to be down at Pine Street in the training room. The final session is a treatment plant tour at Rio. So the first night, Wednesday, November 1st, our theme is water supply and conservation. So participants will hear from our water resources, our planners, and our conservation team. The second session is on November the 9th, talking about our water system infrastructure and water quality. So from there, they'll hear from our operations and maintenance and our engineering folks. The third session is on the administration of the agency, as well as finance and customer care. So those three groups will be represented. And then the final, I mentioned, is treatment and a graduation culmination. So they'll get a treatment plant tour, and they'll see really how the treatment process works. So those sessions, the first three, all start at 5 o'clock in the evenings. The Saturday, November 18th session is 8:30 in the morning tour, wrapping up right around noon. There will be information that's going to go out to all directors about participation, attendance, that if you want to come to it, drop in, be a part of it. We did have 30 limited spots this time. We increased it from 20. And as of this afternoon, we're at 25 participants that have been registered. On Friday, last Friday, we were at 8. So we got information about it. Steve talked about it on Tuesday. We had a flyer go out. We did a direct email to our subscribers, and we got it up to 25. So we anticipate filling by the end of this week. The third that I wanted to talk about is our public events. And just an update of a few events that we've attended in the last quarter and some that are coming up in the public side. I know we've talked about that or have mentioned about it in the board meeting. So I wanted to talk about something that we've learned and what we're going to change for those. So back in the summer, we went to concerts in the park. We found that our setup was not really conducive to what we wanted to accomplish there. Once the concert starts, there's really no interaction with the public. And so that's a wasted 2.5 hours. We would have been much better just setting up only the water station and having more presence at the water station. What we had was the water station set up at the back of the concert. We had a booth up at the front. Those groups weren't talking to each other, not able to talk to each other, and people weren't visiting the front. We should have had more of a presence at the back and made that a place where we could have interacted more. So that's something to learn for when we do that. We also did the River Rally in September. It was well run. We've become a sponsor of that for the next year. And what we're trying to do with them, and we're starting the conversations, is to have more of that keynote address. Mm-hmm. In addition to the mayor speaking about the event, mm-hmm. having somebody from the agency represented to talk about the watershed and what the purpose of the event is. So we're starting those conversations now. We were invited by the city council to bring water to the powwow at Hart Park, which we were unable to do because they specifically wanted water bottles. We don't have water bottles. So we were able to make it work and set up our water station. The trouble was is that, you know, we tried to tack on and say, well, we're also going to bring out information to pass out to people. There was no other vendor there. So we were very out of place, and we were the only place to go with a booth and get information. Nobody, there were no other organizations represented. It was also raining that weekend, so we didn't have a great turnout. We would have liked to have been brought in more than 8 days before the event. So some conversations we've had with both groups have think of us a little sooner in how we can make this work.
And can I just interject?
Sure.
That would be a really great place to have some native plants there, because that fits into the theme of taking care of or honoring traditional ways of taking care of our watershed, which includes the use of native plants too. So maybe incorporating that a little bit into it next year as well.
Yeah, what we've tried to impress upon the organization, because like I said, the request came from the city, because they had reached out to the city to then get to us, and it just never, that communication didn't happen until it was the Thursday before. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, you guys are going, and you're doing this.
Wow.
So we can make it happen, but we weren't planning on it.
Wow.
So that's one that we're going to work on for next year. We did the senior fair at the senior center, and that was an excellent opportunity for us to fit right in with ratepayer assistance, low-income housing. And we had a few questions about water quality, but it was mostly account service. We had our customer care team there. They saw approximately 400 people go through their line in a few hours that they were there. Upcoming events on November the 2nd, we'll be at Touch a Truck at Central Park. We'll have a utility truck there. We'll have staff showing off the utility truck and interacting with the kids. We're doing the Light Up Main Street event with the city on November the 18th. Mm-hmm. We've got a holiday-themed giveaway, a booth, a table. We'll also have information on usual rebates, conservation, assistance. And then to close out the year, we have on December the 2nd, the Family Literacy Festival hosted by the New Hall Library. So there we'll have our water station and we'll also have information. Mm-hmm. So those are our events that are coming up. Moving into our coordination with our regional partners and state agencies, we recently attended the CSDA North LA County chapter meeting, which is focused on outreach and engagements. We got some good connections there and some takeaways from those presentations on how to go out into the public and stay involved and active. We also had staff attend last week's OC Water Summit. You may remember we had talked about developing one here prior to COVID, and then we've been pushing that off a little bit. So we had our staff in communications. There was also water resources staff that went down, partly as research to find out how this event was run, how it was set up, what we need to do logistically. The second, to really key in with trends and make those contacts and figure out what are the hot topics, what would we potentially discuss, and what can we take back here. So some of the takeaways that staff found, the topics that we talked about were past droughts and how they continue to be challenges, how to work on our working with aging infrastructure, and then overcoming policy hurdles and working with state agencies and not really seeing it as a us versus them. We're competing against other agencies and other industries for water resources and legislation, but really coming together and advocating together. So we'll have a full breakdown of that. They're also going to release recordings of those sessions in the next 2 weeks that we're going to share out with staff so they can attend those since we've been able to get access to those. You may have seen General Manager Matt Stone had an op-ed in the Signal about the state water project. I'm sorry, the Delta Conveyance Project. So we're working with that group up north on getting more information out to the public about DCP, why it's important, why it's relevant to Santa Clarita and not just the wider state. And we're partnering with them on their website and social media to continue to get those messages out. They're also planning to come present a project update and to take questions from you all at a January board meeting.
Okay.
So they're doing a project status update later this fall with the agency staffs. I believe that either Matt or Steve is going to that. And then their staff will come down here and in person do a presentation and update on that. And then we continue, I mentioned, to stay connected with other organizations regionally. And I wanted to give you all an update that next week, our staff will be at the Public Relations Society of America's PRISM Awards in Los Angeles. We're up for 4 of them this year, which is big to be nominated for one as a water agency. It's open to all public relations professionals in Los Angeles. So we have 4 campaigns that are finalists. We're not guaranteed to win an award, but we are of the top 3 is my understanding. For the Drought Ready SCV campaign in the category of government community relations, our consumer confidence report for the annual reports award, and then both our internal newsletter, the pipeline, which was at the agency staff, and our external water currents newsletter are both up for the top newsletters award. So we'll find that out next week. We'll have an update for that. And then lastly, I wanted to touch on a piece of information that we sent out to the public, the conservation mailer, which came after we entered a no shortage stage. We put together a fact sheet to send out what does this mean for the public. So that was a direct mail piece, and it also went out to all of our email subscribers. We sent that fact sheet out to 67,000 approximately customer accounts, and we emailed 16,750. And we had an open rate of our email of 54%, and our average for all industries, according to our vendor, is 34%. So we bested that by quite a bit. So information is getting out there, and we continue to work on keeping the public informed about that. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Any public comment? There's none. Director comment.
Kudos.
Thanks.
Great job.
Thank you.
That's exciting. All those nominations and all the information. I'm still, they are listening to our phone.
I agree.
No.
If I can augment, I'm sorry. I meant to bring up, we're working with a group in Orange County, Mike Alvord, our director of operations and maintenance. We've been trying to relaunch our speakers bureau. So he's been asked to speak about PFAS and what SAV Water has done. Mm-hmm. So that's an opportunity that he will take into a presentation in November that got confirmed today. And then myself and our communications team are pitching a session for CAPIO for next year to present on public engagement. And then later next year, in about June or so, I've been asked to sit on a panel at the CSDA conference about customer and employee surveys and how get information from that as well.
Yeah.
I also think the thing with the city, it's like it's a two-way street. Like if we show up for them last minute,
that's why we do.
It's like smart. Mm-hmm. Smart. Thank you.
So where is Mike speaking?
I'll pull up. They made a request to pull up exactly.
We just, if it's geographic, like Orange County, that's what I want to know.
Yeah, so how it came to be was the person that reached out was actually through the California Resource Management Association. They requested a speaker from the sanitation districts of LA County. Mm-hmm. And with our contacts with them, they said, you know, Santa Cruz is doing PFAS much more than we're really not doing anything. And so I'm going to refer you to them. The event is in Buena Park, but it's for the California Resource Management Association. So it's a minor group.
As far as Speakers Bureau goes, my vision was more local.
Yeah.
I'm not super excited. I mean, I'm glad that he's got the opportunity. And
Are we going to make speakers available locally for like Rotary or whoever wants to hear? Or do we already, or is that going to come?
We take requests already. I don't think we have a formal program and advertised it, but we do when they reach out.
Right.
There's been talk of doing more of a formal program over the years.
Yeah. So what does the program entail? Like, is it like any group organization wants somebody to come and speak about something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now it's informal when we take emails. Hey, I would like for somebody to come out and talk about water treatment of the treatment plan, like we've talked about for the Nature Center. There's groups that reach out. JCI, most often it's JCI. Mm-hmm. And we'll have somebody go in and speak with them.
Okay, thanks. And a few questions. So I'm kind of going to go back to the top of your list and go down that way. So the spectrum, I'm just trying to understand, why spectrum?
We had an existing relationship with Spectrum for video advertising in a previous year. Mm-hmm. And at the start of July, when all of our contracts ended, we reevaluated what had already been budgeted and allocated and listed as here's who we advertise with. And so we restructured of this is what we want to get out of it for this year. Mm-hmm. So we pivoted instead of just television, because folks are not generally watching broadcast television, to go more digital and more search engine and utilize their digital network that way, while still having some of the video elements, but we've really expanded the internet-based.
And then under social media, you were talking about doing more of like videos. The video of Laura, I loved that. That was so awesome. And I saw that it got a ton of views. So like, it was fun and comical and light, but it got across the message. So that I thought that was the best. Okay, let's see. Yeah, you answered that question. How is the demonstration garden going? Has anybody taken a peek over there? I haven't gone over there in a bit, but I'm a little worried.
We have not set up any sort of programming there yet. And that's what we had a discussion with conservation and Matt Dickens last week in his group. We brought in the teachers as well to see what could we make happen. So we're still formulating how we set up events there. But that is something that every time that we go by, there's people. And on weekends, soccer, there's just people just walking through it.
Because I was there, but it's been a few weeks, and there was like a couple of the plants had died. And so I'm like, okay. I mean, and I know that was to be expected because the time of the planting wasn't optimal. So, but I'm just wondering if people are kind of checking in every once in a while just to make sure like not everything's dying. So
they're switching up the signage and the kiosk because the way that came down, we had to opt for a less durable paper to go in there for the event launch, mm-hmm. because the sizing that was given to us from the kiosk manufacturer was not correct.
Oh.
So we printed everything very nice and it was bad. So we recently were out there and we noticed the same thing with the plants, and we had Matt come out and take a look. So they're working on those elements. But yeah, every time we're out there switching out posters and checking on it, there's folks walking
there. Yeah. I know I think some kids got some of the rocks and they like put them into a formation. And I'm like, well, they're engaging in the park. So
do something. It's a rock garden.
Okay.
I heard they're going to come out next. And they're engaging in my park.
So for the water summit, I don't want to waste a ton of time, but what are we thinking in terms of a target audience if this is something we bring to our agency?
So originally, it's my understanding that when Kathy was exploring it back in 2019, that it would be bringing together local organizations.
Okay.
And we would not just water providers, but stakeholders in our watershed throughout. And just really, we would organize from Ventura County up through, mm-hmm. you know, forest area and bring everybody together to talk about what issues, because that's as far as I understand the research got. And I was looking more of, this is a water summit in OC. Yeah, it doesn't apply to us, but the overarching topics could. So what does something like this look like?
Yeah.
So that's what they're planning to get their day.
Okay, because I know Ventura is having theirs next week or the week
United
after.
Water does stuff like that.
Yeah, so in terms of doing like a United one, it'd be nice to maybe...
No, I mean United future. Water, the...
Yeah, the water district, yeah. Okay. I was just trying to kind of understand that a little bit better. In terms of the awards, first of all, congratulations on 4 nominations. That's awesome. And I'm just wondering, is there going to be an invitation extended to Kathy to also, because a lot of that was her work too, right?
Yes.
To,
yeah, these are all programs from the last year.
Okay. Is she going to be able to?
I don't know if she will be.
And then the conservation mailer that went out, I saw that. That was great. My only comment related to that when I saw that was I noticed that the QR code for the bilingual was on the very back corner. And I'm wondering if just next time if you would consider putting that on the front so that it was a little bit more visible. It didn't catch my eye until after I'd read the whole thing. So, and then lastly, so the last page in the packet, I know we didn't cover the rest of the stuff in the packet, but the last page of the packet is the sponsorship tracking. And I noticed that there was a sponsorship for Hart High School for a competition at College of the Canyons, which I think is great because I think engaging the high schools as much as possible is really good, especially given the conversation we just had. And so I have something I'd like to put out. So the last year, Valencia High School, for the first time, did a fundraising project for a sister school. I think you heard me talk about it because I talked about it a little bit. We have them come in. Remember, we gave them a certificate for it. They were raising funds for a gravity-based water filtration system for a sister school in Vietnam.
Yes.
It was so successful that they're doing it again this year. And the ASB director reached out to me and said, hey, would SCB Water like to be a sponsor for this? And I said, I don't know. So I talked to Matt Stone about it during one-on-one and we kind of batted it around a little bit, but then it didn't go anywhere and he's on vacation. So
I can give you an update on that because I've spoken to.
Oh, good.
Gravity. So we mentioned Hart first off and back in this committee in the summer, we went through our sponsorship participation criteria.
Yeah.
So we checked with that. With this one, I spoke with Steve about it.
Okay.
Because we don't have record of participating in it last year. We don't have.
We didn't participate in it last year.
Okay. So they believe that we have participated.
No, I gave money last year.
Okay. Our criteria for sponsorships, it's different than event participation. This is not, they're not hosting an event for us to participate. This is as if we were to sponsor a conference, let's say. What is the criteria?
Yeah.
So since it benefits the organization and it benefits the local community, but it doesn't benefit the local community. It benefits sister school.
Yeah.
And so what we kicked around, Steve and I did, is it's not a cut and dry yes or no. What we would like to do is offer this as an opportunity for the staff members of the agency, should they wish to do a philanthropy, as taking it on an organization-wide, we want to donate to this cause this year. So that's an opportunity that we're looking at, probably not for this year, just based on the timeline that they were requesting for information. But I reached out, I spoke with the woman who's from the organization that's then working with the ASB, and said, please send us everything you've got for next year.
Okay.
The information that they had available for what this campaign would be. And another reason that it was not complete, it was not comprehensive of really what were they doing, what the explanation that you gave now is much more in depth than I can. Also, the limit that we could donate without triggering something. There's a certain levels that
public gift of
we could not give more than $499.
Okay.
And if we did, we would have no recognition. There's no deliverable back to the agency for it. We just gave money as a donation. That's not, there's no global inclusion. There's nothing like this.
So that was my understanding with that. If we did a sponsorship, they would put our logo on stuff on the correspondence that goes out so that we get something out of
it. The only thing that she told me is after 500, they could do for $1,000. They would put our logo on the system at the school.
In a different
which
country.
Does not.
Wait, which school?
The one in Vietnam.
Oh.
We would have no, no involvement in the procurement, the development, the vetting. So it didn't make sense to put our logo on something that we didn't
know. Well, no, I was saying, I was thinking the logo would go out through Valencia High School.
Can we talk? I wanted to try to stop close to 7 because we have another meeting tomorrow too. Can we discuss that?
But yes, we've looked at that, okay. And we're leaning more towards a agency philanthropy,
okay.
Adopt a cause for something like that.
Okay. Thanks. We done on this one?
I'll ask my question offline.
All right. Thank you for your presentation. Good summary. I like the numbers, the statistics in there. We have the planning calendar attached as number 6. Public calendar. We will be meeting next month as listed. And
may I make one note on that?
Yes.
The big one for that for next month is the legislative platform, reviewing the legislative platform, because then the action item would then be to recommend that to the board for adoption at the December 5 meeting. So we'll be meeting and bringing that for review for next month. That's the big.
Can you get that packet earlier?
That's like once Steve gets back on me.
Okay. Yeah. Because those are usually lengthy and wordy. And
Yeah. And, well, I might suggest consider dropping the legislative consultant reports, because if we need time to go through that, that makes it, if the agenda item itself is going to be like an hour or something, the discussion. I haven't been on this committee when we talk about the legislative platform, but I assume there might be some.
It's not that, and it hasn't been that long in the past, because there hasn't been a whole lot of changes from year to year. It's usually,
this committee is so bare to begin with. I think it's starting to take off extra stuff. It's just
my thought on it. One, I heard Barry Chikali talk about sites, so that's something to, I would want to have at least them present, the consultants to weigh in, I guess, or
our legislative advocates. Okay.
Yeah, just so that they're aware of what we're talking about. And that's something that we want to discuss.
So have them online during it.
So I think they might as well.
All right. Okay. Any other questions or comments on the agenda coming up? Calendar? Yeah. Okay. And then committee request for future agenda items.
This was just one we added. If you had specific things that you want us to bring up, then talk about it.
Thank you for adding.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. We'll see everybody tomorrow.
Adjourned?
Yes.
Okay.